Recorded live in Nightmare Studios in Houston, Texas, you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show, where two jamokes drink and rate craft beer while they chew the fat about the world of hard rock and heavy metal, followed up by one-on-one interviews with veterans and newcomers in the industry. I'm your official announcer, Joey Clams, and here to introduce themselves is tonight's special guest.
This is Andy B. Frank from Brainstorm, and I give you the right to rock.
Without further ado, here are two co-hosts who are so metal, they pour motor oil on their cereal. It's Genghis and Ragman.
I'm surprised you know any of it. I didn't know what that was.
You were doing it in the car. I don't know.
Nice try, Holmes.
Hey, so we're here at Star Pizza. Do a little pizza before we go see. Who are we going to see, Paisan?
The inimitable. The maestro, Holmes.
The maestro?
Yngwie J. Malmsteen.
He should change his middle name to Yngwie Maestro Malmsteen.
Y&M, Holmes.
This guy. Well, yeah, so last time we saw him, it's been a few years. He was referred to the whole show by his band as the Maestro. Not Yngwie J. Malmsteen, but the Maestro.
That's funny that I don't even remember that. That's how much I must have tried to block that out of my mind.
What was interesting, and it's been, like I said, a few years, we interviewed Ethan Broche, the first time we met Ethan, and went into the club and did a great interview, but we missed Yngwie, so it kind of sucked in a way that we missed the Maestro. So tonight we get a free show, which is pretty freaking awesome, here at Proof Rooftop that we'll be at later. We may try to sneak this thing in, just do some play-by-play in there, but actually, you guys have probably heard the interview by now, but Chips and Elf, we talked about how does Proof, or how do some of these venues do free shows?
Yeah.
And it's all about the bar. It's all about the bar.
Oh, no, that makes sense. I mean, most of these clubs, it's all about selling you liquor because that's the markup, right?
I tell you what, if you guys miss the show, let me plug in something Chip said. This is pretty cool.
Well, because people are drinking their asses off out there. Everybody at the bar.
Okay, that's what I figured it was, but I get what did they, I guess they give you some sort of guarantee. Do you get something off the bar after that, or?
Yep, it's food and drink. they make a Brinks truck off that, believe me. And they probably, they get in there, you know, between 750 and 1,200 people piled in an outdoor little place. And the club owner is a wonderful guy. He really takes care of his bands.
Oh, sweet.
It gets really good groups to come in there and play. So,
oh, yeah, man.
They provide a good service over there and great bands, and the fans love rock and roll out there. It's funny, I just played there, five, 6 months ago, and now I'm getting ready to come out there and play again.
So, yeah, there you go. That's not our topic, but I just think it's kind of interesting. And I'm not bitching. I'm very happy about this. Actually, the first show I'm paying to go see there is going to be Warren and Steelheart. So, yeah, $9 a ticket. What are you going to do? You got to go. It's on a Sunday night, too, not even during the week.
Not bad, not bad. It's a pretty cool venue, too. We've seen a couple of shows already, and I think each one of them has been free. So what's to complain about, dude?
There's nothing to complain about.
We saw, consider we see, we saw Lynch Mob? No. Who am I thinking of? It was Winger. Sorry, I don't know why I'm mind blanked on that.
I forgot too. Don't forget it. I mean, I saw Quiet Riot there, and I've seen Winger. And I think that's the only two shows I've been to.
Oh, okay. Then maybe that's the only one I've been to. I thought I'd been to one more, but because I was supposed to go see the Iron Maidens, and I that some shit went down.
Well, we had tickets to see several other shows. Actually, we're going to see Warrant there, and it rained out, and they put it in Warehouse Live, which was even better.
Exactly, because that's a pretty cool venue too. I mean, I dig the idea of the rooftop lounge. It sounds cool. It sounds very like California, right? Or even, I think they do that in San Antonio. It's popular, but you can't do that in Houston in the summertime. It's like making tater tots out of the top of the roof.
Yeah.
You just say, oh, cooking, man. It's because it's still in the 90s in the evening, at least the early part.
Well, I saw, checked the weather, 87, so it's not going to be too horrible.
Like a cold front.
So anyway, we have a beer of the show. It's called the Platypus Ranga.
Ranga.
So I tell you what, before we jump in the beer, how about a classic Inve, Tim?
For sure.
What do you want to play?
Black Star.
You stole it right out of my mouth over here. Here we go. So, I said local brewery, Platypus Brewery, actually just a few blocks away. And typically you say, well, Genghis and Radman, they're beer drinkers. Why aren't they at the brewery? Because we're at our favorite pizza place.
We usually do, especially if it's a downtown show, we usually do the pizza right before it. And Star is one of the best pizza joints near downtown, without question. So,
or in town in general. I mean, it's my favorite in all of Houston.
I hear a lot of good stuff about Uno, but I haven't been there. Like, they got kind of a deep dish thing going.
Are they even here anymore?
I thought there was one still, unless they moved it, on Richmond.
It's gone.
Richmond. Kirby, it's history?
Yeah.
Then they might be gone, unless they're like way in the woodlands or something.
Who knows?
Screw those guys.
So anyway, we got the Ranga by Platypus, Red IPA. Not bad. said, I'm not a huge fan of platypus and stuff. I haven't had anything that just blew me away.
I went there once a while back because when we were, because since Harvey, we had the flood. And the place where I work, the building I work at, it got flooded out. So we moved to the other side of town temporarily. We're going to be moving back in September. And because it was close for lunch, I'd get bored about where to eat. So I just drive up Washington, and there's a taco joint, Taco Deli, that I think started in Austin. Anyway, they're pretty good. But in the same giant building, that same area there, that block, that city block, is Platypus Brewing on the other side. So after lunch one day, I just walked over there and hung out and tried some beers. And they had a couple of good ones. I was impressed. I think the one I liked the best might have been one of their IPAs, but I don't think it was the ring. It wasn't a red one. But I was impressed with how good it was, because I'm, you know me, I'm not really an IPA guy, but right. Had some tasty stuff, and they had a stout that wasn't too bad. But, yeah, they don't blow you away, and they got a little kitchen there, like a lot of these breweries, but you can't beat the pizza, Holmes.
Yeah. No shit. So, anyway, let's rate this beer real quick. You said red IPA. Not my... little hazy, not too much. Almost looks like an amber in color. Let me take a little whiff over here.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's a nice aroma.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost malty, almost caramely for IPA.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. I think what I did is I sense I can still taste or smell the hoppiness of it, but it doesn't have that piney, resiny thing that really turns me off about IPAs, and that's what I think moves it into the malty version.
So we got some lacing. Nice.
A little soap.
What do you think of the look of it? I give it about a 3, 3.5.
Yeah, I think that'll work for me. 3.
Okay, a little, we did the aroma. What was the aroma? About the same 3, 3.5?
3, 3.5, yeah.
All right, the taste. Not bad. It's smooth. This would be good on like a hot day. It's kind of a little watery. I like the burnt notes at the end. It's kind of bitter at the end. Not due to the hops, but I think by the roasted malts that they use to make it red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you might be right. The it does have a little bit of a, can't tell what that, it's a little bit of a fruitiness, but I can't tell what that fruit is in there. It's not like a plum or raisin like you would in a quad or something, but it's got something that's kind of helping to balance out that hoppiness.
Yeah, so not bad. Overall, 3?
Yeah, I think easily 3.
This would be one I would order again, too. I usually get the 11 Below. They got a red IPA that's really nice as well, but I dig this. It's pretty good.
I dig the new stuff.
All right, let's play a tune, and then we'll get back into this thing.
I am aware that I am an asshole. I really don't care about all of that, though. I got nothing to prove. But honestly, I'm just like you.
As always, we're kind of badass like that. And guys, just to give you a heads up, there is a lot of crowd noise, and we apologize. A lot of children in here, and usually we have John to be able to kind of filter out the sounds and come in, but he's actually been banned from here.
Yeah.
There was an incident with some underage people. We can't get into it. It wasn't
pretty. It involved, he was complaining about, he said he thought it was a fruit pizza or something like that. I don't know what it was, but because it was a lot of, it was a big mess, and it wasn't pretty.
So he's at 20 yards. I see him out there. He's smoking. He's vaping out there in 100 degree, almost 100 degree weather, sweating his ass off in a tank top, a jock, and mountain boots.
His usual attire.
Yes.
We call that the work suit.
Minus the tie. Yeah, I told him, I say, hey, we got some investors coming in to talk to us about the show, and wear a tie or something, and you know, be presentable. So he wears his normal attire with a tie.
Clean yourself up.
It was a fucking clip-on.
Of course it was.
On his chest.
Yeah. I don't even know where that's clipping.
He's like, I didn't know where to clip it on, so I just did it to my hair.
He clipped it to his little seashell necklace that he wore.
So we got a topic over there.
Well, it's in touch with the whole Malmsteen thing. It's the whole neoclassical movement, sort of what's the state of it. Do you think that... I mean, we still have new acts coming out that do neoclassical, right? And I don't mean incorporate that into their repertoire. I mean, like, that's their thing. Is there any new... Who's the latest new band to come along that was neoclassical in nature?
To be honest, I can't really think of one. It's more of a progressive thing with the shredder-type guitar players.
Yeah.
It's more shredding with maybe some neoclassical elements. But to pick someone out of a... Actually, the stuff I've been listening to lately, I mean, if you instrumental-wise, like Gus G., Ethan Broche, Angel Vivaldi, they're all just more, it's more flash type
they're
guitar.
Shredder, yeah, they're flashy, they're shredders. There's no shortness of shred going on these days. And I guess maybe that's where it gets a little confused. I sort of equate shred with neoclassical, not necessarily, obviously, but it's certainly neoclassical is shred. It's not neoclassical without shred, but you can't have shred without neoclassical.
But, I mean, just talking about Yngwie, do you feel like he's kind of, he's like the AC/DC of instrumental guitar players. You know what you're going to get every time. But
he never fails to deliver, but yeah, you're not going to get blown away like, well, that's something new, or, oh, what a refreshing new sound, or anything like that.
But if you think of a guy like Marty Friedman to start off in Cacophony, and we can play some Cacophony, I haven't heard in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Let's play some right now, and we'll give you an example. So there's Cacophony. So Marty Friedman today, something recent over the last couple of years, will play. He's still doing more of that Kitaro Japanese few stuff, but a heavier thing where he's gotten these death metal guys.
The picture should be here any minute.
Sweet. these death metal guys and going in a very heavy direction, but he's kind of shed. He's evolved.
Exactly.
Would you say Yngwie's never really evolved from where he started, or what?
I think the most he's ever evolved, if you want to call it that, is that I think based on where he started basically pure neoclassical, right? And then somewhere around, what was it, Eclipse or something, he started getting that bluesy thing, saying, oh, by the way, I can do bluesy stuff too. And it was kind of cool, like way he does in Deja Vu, where he does that little break where he gets kind of, gets the wah out and goes a little, and gets all bluesy with that. That's cool. I mean, I like that. He incorporates it well. But that's the most he's ever broken out of it. And he still kind of keeps that in there, which is nice. But no, he hasn't, like said, I did that, even Paul Gilbert, right? Right? He started off super neoclassical, and then eventually just said, you know, that's cool and everything, and it's part of my repertoire. I can still do those licks, still doing great, but I want to do other shit. And he got more into songwriting, more song-based material.
I think Yngwie's problem was he comes out with Odyssey with Joel Lynn Turner, has his success, but he's got someone to compete with in the band. It's not all about Yngwie at that point. And then I think he went backwards again. But yeah, he has flirted with blues and stuff like that. But had he built on what him and Joel Lynn Turner were doing, I think they could have been badass for a long time. And he could even be bigger than he is. I mean, he's a guitar god. We all know that. But I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's like he just kind of hit a wall and said, okay, I'm going to go back to doing this other thing.
Yeah, and again, you made a good analogy, you know, compare him to like AC/DC. Same with AC/DC. When they were still doing out new albums, what was that one, Ice, whatever it was, Black Ice or whatever, they were still, you know, like, you weren't expecting anything new. I mean, it sounded like AC/DC. It was great, but it's like pretty much the same three chords we've been here and the same bluesy licks from Ingus, but that didn't make it any less badass.
But if you think about it, I mean, if you bring AC/DC into it, you had your Bon Scott era that was a different band, and then when Brian Johnson got in the band, it was like the same thing. You're going to get the same thing every time. And I think maybe same, I guess they wrote to their singer, so to speak.
I'm hit. Uh-oh, looks like some pizza coming.
Yeah, right.
Check me on this. Am I losing my mind? I don't understand what this has to do with anything.
The right to rock.
You know, we were at Bill and Ted, and they went the, and they ended up somewhere else.
Yeah,
I guess that happened.
Wayne's World, aren't you?
Yeah. What did I say?
You were saying Bill and Ted.
Oh, I meant Wayne's World.
School Holmes.
I am Holmes. So we have arrived at Proof Rooftop, getting ready for Yngwie, and probably some shitty local band
or two, because I mean, it's what, only 7 o'clock or something? 7:30.
The beauty about this venue, though, the show's usually over between 10:30 and 11.
Okay, cool. I'm down with that.
Not to sound old, but we are. We got shit to do the next day.
Got a lot of plans.
Hey, and We didn't pick the music here, but it's weird. They're playing Rad. You think is John? Where's John?
Exactly. This motherfucker needs to come in, and you think he'd be good at the DJ board?
Well, he said we got in after they frisked him, and he enjoyed that way too much.
I know. I think he planted extra shit on him to get extra frisked. I don't know what his deal is.
He's like, I might have a metal plate somewhere. You want to find it?
I'm
like,
I don't remember if I took it out or not. You might want to check.
I think he's got like his jock with like the cups. I think it's metal.
And he wears like cargo pants with like extra pockets on them. He's like, you might want to check that pocket too. I've never seen a pocket in the crotch. He's got one there he had put in, I think.
Oh, yeah. He's got his own line. You know that. So we got us a couple of car box staycations, exactly. A little session ale, keeping it light while we sweat and watch a good show hopefully later.
It's a loud motherfucker, I'll say that. You know, it's hard to find a quiet place to do this.
This is quiet for us here.
Yeah, no shit. But I'm looking forward to it. I mean, walking in, they already had the Wasted Years playing by Iron Maiden, so I was already getting pumped up.
Oh, now we got a little Rat. Had a little Tesla over there.
Exactly. I'm hip to it.
So where we kind of left off was like these neoclassical guys basically saying eBay's been, in our opinion, kind of in a mold, so to speak, like an AC/DC mold.
Right.
But other guys we started talking about when we were eating, and we knew you didn't want to hear us eating, was look at Richie Kotzen, what he evolved to. He was a shredder guy,
right.
Neoclassical shredder that turned into more of a blues guy.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other guys like, say, Vinnie Moore or Paul Gilbert, even Greg Howe to some extent, they're kind of the same deal. They started off straight neoclassical, obviously influenced by, you know, Malmsteen and that movement that was clearly starting up in earnest. And so over time, though, they kind of moved away from that eventually, kind of like, I guess, once they felt like, well, that's run its course. I did that. I played it for all it was worth. So now, you know, I want to move on and do some other shit and evolve my actual songwriting and do, you know, they're different and interesting things. And so now, you know, you're like, well, Ingwe didn't quite move on from that, I guess. I mean, he still kind of puts out the same stuff. Like we said, like AC/DC, he's dependable. He always puts out pretty good quality shit. And so if that's your thing, then you're all about it. Yeah. Am I right?
You're right. And when you're right, you're right. I tell you what, I think we should play. Let's play some. For a lot of people that probably know Kotzen how he is today, probably don't know him from his early beginnings.
Okay.
Why don't we play some classic Shrapnel Kotzen?
Totally.
Let's do it. So there's Kotzen then. We've heard Kotzen now. So, you know, I don't have any real old Vinnie Moore. But if you think about Vinnie Moore, he was with Vicious Rumors.
Oh,
when they first started their first record. Right, I think he broke out and did the solo thing.
Right.
And then had the solo career, and then now, as we all know, he's in UFO until they shut it down, which they're talking about doing. So, right. Hence, Benny's on the solo tour with Gus G coming up in September.
Right, and that's what I'm thinking of, yeah, like, what was it, Mind's Eye or whatever, the one that had Daydream or whatever, all that really great shit. That's where I got into him. And he's a fucking badass, and he's just like you said, all of these guys have moved on since then, pretty much. I can't think of any that haven't, that and went into more of a bluesy or just a more song-oriented kind of style. That whether it's not all about the shred, they can still shred, of course, but it's not like they're organizing everything around the shred. They're writing good rock songs that just happen to have shredding all in them.
What was that Vinnie Moore album you looked up a little bit earlier?
Oh, Meltdown, that had Meltdown on it?
Let's play Meltdown.
Let's do that. Shredding all over the fucking place, but it's a lot more listenable, I guess.
Yeah.
And how do you feel about that? I love the Yngwie, Black Star, I'll See the Light Tonight, all these great, and Deja Vu, of course, Heaven Tonight. Great tunes, still badass tunes, but do you look for new neoclassical shit? Or do you just feel like, look, there's great stuff I liked back in the day that was neoclassical. If I hear it, I'm all over it, but I'm happy listening to other shit now.
I think I evolved, and I mean, when I was in high school, college, all about the neoclassical, but now it's more, the last 5 to 10 years I've been more of a blues guy, got into Stevie Ray, more old Hendrix, and shit like that, and rarely do I go back and listen to the old neoclassical stuff. I'll put on Rising Force by Yngwie, his very first record. That's still amazing.
Oh yeah.
But am I going to pull out another record from Yngwie? Odyssey, maybe?
Right.
But that was more song-driven, less instrumental. I don't know. I think I kind of got past it, you know? How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could kind of say, yeah, I kind of grew out of it, I guess. That makes it sound like it's infantile or it's for less developed minds or tastes or whatever. Cool. And I don't mean it like that. I just... It's one of those things where it's like, I don't know, it's like, think of it like movies. You can say, all right, I kind of like horror movies. And then maybe for a while you're like, so I'm looking for like the goriest horror movie I could find. And you find like the extreme version of it. And then after you've seen it, you're like, oh, wow, that was really something. I don't have a need to keep looking for that.
Right.
I've kind of done it. I've seen it. I appreciate the stuff for what it is, but I'm going to go back to just kind of regular shit now and just enjoy what I enjoy, maybe refine my taste a little bit, pick some other elements of things that I didn't used to look for and enjoy it in kind of a new way with a new perspective.
Sure.
But you still appreciate the crazy shit, the extreme shit, but it's not the forefront. It's not that's all I care about or I judge everything by it.
Well, you know, there was a movie that came out last year called Hereditary, and it was more of a mindfucker, like, 70s type horror movie. Kind of remind me of old, like, Omen movies. What a lot of gore. But, man, it was fucked up. And the callus to that is there's been a movie in my Amazon cart for well over a year. And it finally went down like almost $10. And I was like, okay, done.
Right.
Blu-ray. Movie called Rabbit. I don't know if you ever saw it.
I've heard of it.
These people all get rabies.
Yeah, they go
crazy. And it's almost like it's almost like zombie movies of today.
Like, what's that movie, The Crazies or whatever, where everybody freaks out?
Yeah, a little bit like that. And I was watching the preview. I was kind of laughing. I was like, that's going to be fucking cool to see that again.
Yeah.
It freaked me out when I was a kid, but now it's kind of laughable.
Right. Yeah, so I think that's kind of how I look at the neoclassical stuff. I totally appreciate it for what it is. Love when Mousy comes through, it's like, fuck it, let's go see it. I'd love to see Mousy. But it's not like, oh shit, he's the only thing I listen to. Too bad there's no more neoclassical. I can still appreciate all the other shit too. But now I appreciate it in a new way. Now that I've seen sort of like, this is like the high end of it. This is how crazy that shit can get. This is how fast a motherfucker can play and pick every note and all that. You appreciated the precision and the craft, I guess, of it. It was really impressive. But it's also cool to see how that can get morphed into other shit and sort of be a background for other things. And people can still come along, like I say, Paul Gilbert. The majority of what he plays now is kind of bluesy, but it's with the kind of precision that he learned playing neoclassical shit.
Well, I was going to add to your point that I would say a lot of our favorite guitar players have evolved from these neoclassical shredders to real tasteful, bluesy, flashy type guitar players.
I agree.
So, I mean, everybody we've known pretty much mentioned, you know, Vinnie Moore, Paul Gilbert, really, Richie Kotzen, another guy.
Pelletieri.
He's kind of in that rut of AC/DC rut. Alex, what's it, Axel Rudy Pell, kind of in that rut. Every album sounds the same. I tell you what, let's play something off the new Axel Rudy Pell.
Right.
Haven't played them in a while.
Cool.
John sees us doing the show. He's laughing because he turned up the sound in here. That motherfucker's fired.
We need to keep him off the board. Keep him away from the booth.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll have to take shit over.
That ain't no shit. But, you know, another guy we talked about earlier was Tony McAlpine. I'm wearing his shirt tonight. Has he done anything past you know, his neoclassical stuff that's blown you away. He's experimented, but I think he goes back to his bread and butter like an eBay.
Right. Yeah, I think he's gotten a little more kind of proggy, a little more fusion-y a little bit. And but he always kind of keeps that same basic neoclassical sort of feel to his stuff. But, hey, I dig it. I mean, and Brosh, Ethan Brosh, he does some neoclassical stuff, but he does a lot of other shit too, doesn't he?
Very influenced by McAlpine, loves McAlpine. So there's a lot of influence there. I would love to see McAlpine get in, like, they had that Project Driver back in the day. But like a Sons of Apollo now, imagine McAlpine doing something like that.
Getting like a cool rock supergroup kind of thing?
Fuck yeah, that'd be awesome.
Really awesome, yeah.
Proggy, I mean, get to just world-class musicians in there, write some great songs, and fucking kill it.
With some really nice, nasty, funky beats, man.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Kind of like Hive Mind. Hive Mind's kind of got that feel. The shred is there, and they don't mind showing it, but they also like a nice, groovy fucking beat, too.
Oh, I hope you guys enjoyed that show. Those guys were amazing live. Their new EP's amazing. Their first full record's really good, too. So, I mean, we hope to introduce you guys to some new music that we get introduced to and are lucky enough to be able to talk to a lot of these guys. But good point. Hive Mind's a new up-and-comer. Young guys fucking killing it, man. And Angel Vivaldi.
Oh, fuck yeah. That's another example of a guy who is doing a lot of basically neoclassical shit, but it's got a fun feeling to it. It feels really kind of flashy, but it feels new and fun and very kind of a emotional kind of... It's really uplifting, I think, even though you could just say, oh, he's just doing a lot of neoclassical licks, but he makes it work. I think a really talented person can make that kind of shit sound really cool.
Oh, I agree, 100%. And he definitely does it, because I was like, ah, who's this guy, you know? And went in there and he blew me away.
He was fucking awesome, dude. He was amazing.
So anyway, I guess the show's getting ready to start here.
Yeah.
How about we do a few classics? We could go with our theme here, or we could just pull something out of our ass.
It's up to you. You want to take a shot at it first, or?
I tell you what, I'm going to bring back, we didn't play this earlier. I'm going to go with some Richie Kotzen. Nice. How about Dream of New Day? I always love that song.
It's a killer fucking tune. Go for it.
Paizan, how about you?
Oh, I think I'm going to go for, since we were, you know, mentioned all those guys we were talking about, let's go for a little Paul Gilbert back in the day. How about a little YRO?
Bucket Racer X, baby. Nice. We'll be right back. right, Paisan, let's do some picks of the week. I'm going to go with the new band. I was really kind of jonesing to hear. Ultraphonics. It's George Lynch and Corey Glover from Living Color.
Fuck yeah, that sounds awesome.
They got a brand new record coming out, original human music, coming out on Ear Music. Looks like on August 3rd. So, soon. Probably out by the time you hear this. I know it's out by the time you hear this. So I tell you what, I'm going to play. All right, I'm going to go with a song called Walk, Run, and Crawl. It's like, I'll walk, then I'll run, then I'm going to crawl like a little baby, I will. So let's check out some Ultraphonics. You got a pick over there.
Yeah, it's not a brand new album. It came out a couple years ago. It's a band out of Dallas, I think. And they're a fucking badass band. I'm really digging them. I only discovered them recently. Their last album that I picked up was Renaissance. And they're called Polyphia. And I think I'm saying the name right. And the track I dig is their second track off that album called Light. Let's do it.
For joining us here in our little shoe, and we'll give you a report on eBay after we see the show tonight. Next show we'll probably do a little bit of a recap. Actually, when we're in the studio again, I've been to a few shows and I got lots on my mind that we'll get off and chat about. And until then, though, we want to give you two big
holds up.
This is Andy B. Frank from Brainstorm, and you are listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up, brothers and sisters.
All right, guys, you're on live with Ragman, Mono e Mono, with a great band, a band that Ragman has been a fan of for many, many years. They're about to have their 30th anniversary. I'm talking about Brainstorm, and we're talking to Andy B. Franck. Andy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, Ragman. How are you? Good to be in your show.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. We talked to Torsten, I think, 2 years ago on the last record on Scary Creatures. So it's good to finally hook up with you, man.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks for having me. Hey, I'm fine.
Well, I tell you what, before we jump into the new record, can you kind of tell people how this record differs from Scary Creatures, the new record being Midnight Ghost?
I think it combines on a very, very professional basis. It combines melody, power, heaviness, you know, everything what Brainstorm is all about since the beginning, but also sounds like a very fresh and hungry band, you know, you have in 2018. So to me, it's a perfect mixture. To me, Midnight Ghost is the album we always wanted to make, and I'm really, really proud of it.
Well, I want to say, and I want to give you props here, Andy, because putting in that record, I was talking to some other artists this week, and when I put in your record, I just got it, and from the first note, I was like, holy shit, man, I'm hooked. the first track, Devil's Eye, I was like, damn, the production on this thing, it just kind of hits you in the face, man. And I'm not saying other Brainstorm releases haven't done that, but like you said, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is very fresh for a band that's, you know, like you said, going on almost 30 years.
Absolutely. This is the 12th album, and we're still able to surprise kids, you know, to surprise our diehard fans, and to surprise new fans, you know, and that's something, yeah, dude, that's way more than I ever expected, to be very honest, you know. So it makes fun. This is the music we're living for, you know, so it's amazing. I just love it, you know. So, yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy with the album. Can't explain.
Oh, definitely, man. And I think the production on this one, it just maybe packs a little bit more of a punch as well. It just kind of in your face. And I know you guys worked with Sebastian Leverman, I guess better known as Seeb, right?
Yes.
From Morten Ogden. Is this the first time you guys have worked with him?
Yes, absolutely. And the funny thing is that he has been a fan of the band since many, many years. And he came to some of our shows back in the days, you know. So, and then he told me one day that it would be awesome that someday we can work together. And I said, hey, come on, we're still searching for a new producer for the next album. So why not doing it together, you know? So we were really, really happy, you know, when he also decided to record us. He was absolutely happy. But the difference, the main difference is, of course, all the other producers and so, they did all a great job. But the difference between them and Seeb is really that you do not just have a great person and a great musician behind the mixing desk. You also have a fan behind the mixing desk, you know. So, and that makes, I think, the difference. Because the first thing he told me is when I came into the studio, he said, Andy, let's record the best possible Brainstorm album ever. And I said, okay, that's a goal. All right, okay, so what do I have to do that? And I said, I will kick you in the butt, you know, so as long as possible. And I never expected that, to be very honest, but sometimes, you know, and some days, he just locked me in the recording room, you know, and treated me, you won't believe, you know, record it again and again and again and again, do it higher, do it lower, do it rougher, do it softer. And what came out at the end, you know, I was really like, okay, wow, that was absolutely worth it, you know. So one day, for example, you know, I just did, I think one line, I did it about 100 or 200 times, and then he said, do it again and again. And then after about 1.5 hours, or so, I was so pissed. I was really so pissed, and I just screamed it into the microphone, like, "Okay, go on, go to hell!" And then I heard him. I heard him on the speakers, like, "Now we're close to it. Now we're close." And I said, "Now we're close to it. I've been doing this since 2 hours, and I'm just pissed, you know." And then he said, "Yeah, this is what I wanted to hear. That fits perfectly into the mood here, you know." And I was really like, "Okay." okay, this is it. This is the reaction after 2 hours. Okay, I'm fine with it, but it was all worth it.
I gotta ask you, what song was that?
I must have been the pyre. As far as I do remember, but there have been many songs where he treated me and kicked me in the ass, you know. But it was good because he always told me, you know, that Andy, your voice should sound way better. You have it, you have the voice and everything else, so we can make it sound more brilliant, you know, more powerful. And I said, okay, I have no idea what you're talking about. But then he said, nah, I have it in my mind, and then we have to bring it down on tape, you know. And then I said, okay, let's do it. And so he did it also with the drums, with bass, with guitars and so on. And that's perfect, you know. That's the difference when you record with a great person and a great producer, a great musician, and plus having a fan behind the mixing desk as well, you know. So, and that comes out at the end, you know. That makes me really proud.
I think that is awesome. And, you know, me as a fan, I don't know how many times I've sat in the car, and I'm kind of like, you know, they call the backseat driver over here. I'm the backseat producer. Like, oh, man, I wish I would have done this, or I wish I would have done that. So that had to be awesome. And what a new dynamic. Is that the first time you've ever worked with a guy that said, I'm such a huge fan?
I think the other guys, you know, the other producer we worked with, you know, were also, they were also into our kind of music and stuff, and of course, but it was the first time for us that somebody was not looking at the clock, you know. He did not really care about the clock, you know. So we started recording, I think, about 10 o'clock in the morning, and then there was no limit, you know. There was no moment when we said, oh, we have to go. So it was just at 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening, we thought, something is missing. It's probably, yeah, food. That's it. Okay, there's your body screaming for something different, not just only singing. Your body screaming for food. And then we went out for lunch, you know. And then we came back, and then we started working again. But that is the difference, you know, and that happened to me for the first time. And I can tell all the musicians out there, you know, whenever you have the chance to record your album with a great person, great musician and everything else, that's, of course, very, very important to have, you know. But if you can combine it with a person who's also a fan of yours, that is the perfect mixture, you know, that makes it 100%.
Oh, yeah, I could see it. And it really kind of comes off.
I do sound enthusiastic, or do I? Yeah, but I am. Sorry, I am.
That's awesome, man. Well, you know, I think that's really cool, man. And what an interesting dynamic. I think if more bands did that, you know, maybe we'd get some better product here and there, you know. But it sounds like y'all almost took an old school approach too, rather than, did you guys all work this out in the studio, a lot of the writing and so forth, or how did you guys do it?
We changed one particular thing we changed, and that is something Thorsten and me, we talked about this always, you know, and over the last couple of years, we always talked about the thing that we should have more time to record an album, to write songs. And that was probably the reason why we already started with writing new songs right after the tour, after the Scary Creatures tour. And then we took them aside. We recorded them. I did some blah, blah, blah vocal lines on it. And then we recorded 10 up to 12 songs, and then we took them aside, and then we did something different. We played festivals, I've been away with another band, and so on and so on. And then in January, we all came back together, and then we started listening to our old shit, you know, to those new songs. For us, in that moment, was old shit. Mm-hmm. So, and then we found out, okay, we can change something here, we should change something there. Oh, that's a great part, we should keep that. Oh, we have to play this twice or three times or whatever. And this is absolutely something I missed always over the years, because whenever we have recorded and released an album, let's say about 6 or 7 months later, I just always sat in front of my stereo, you know, and said to myself, ah, you should have done something different here, you should have sing or use other words there. And this is something I never wanted to have, you know. So, and this is the reason why we have changed the way in writing the songs and producing the song, the album, you know. So we just recorded the album and the songs, then took them aside, and then went back to on the songs, because then you have, let's say, somehow like fresh ears, you know. So you do listen to them differently, and that made the difference to me as well, you know. And that made so much fun, you know, listening to your old shit, you know, no lyrics, just blah 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 with no sense. that made a lot of laughter, you know, inside in our practicing room. You know, we had a lot of laughter about this, but anyway, so yeah, it worked out in the end, so it's fine.
Well, you know what, I can't remember who we talked to, but there was somebody else that had done that kind of put it to the side for, you know, a couple months, and kind of went back and revisited some of the ideas prior to doing the actual recording, and they said, man, there was so many things that they thought, holy shit, I can improve this, and they were able to improve it. So that's a really cool technique that you guys use there.
Yeah. But sometimes, you know, over the last couple of years, it was always the same thing. We released an album, then we went on tour, playing festivals, you know, straight into our rehearsing room, writing, recording, releasing. That was always the same thing, you know. So, and then Torsten and we always said, no, we wanted to break out of this schedule, you know. And then the record company was totally upset, you know. They said something like, oh my god, this will make the album release, the album come out later, half a year or so, 6 or 7 months. And I said, yeah, so, but what's the problem? So, it's about, you know, we have released Scary Creatures in January 2016, and so we have now September in 2018. It's 2.5 years, so that's no problem. So I think, you know, and to be very honest, if it was about 4 or 5 months, what this kind of action used, you know, so recording and taking the songs aside and so on, so it was absolutely worth it, you know. So, and to be very honest, I will do this definitely again.
Nice. Well, let's jump into the new record. And the first single and the first song that really grabbed me that I can't get out of my head is Ravenous Minds. What a great song, man. Can you kind of tell me how that song came together for you?
Crossing my life, ravenous minds, falling till I disappear. Crossing my life, ravenous minds.
with a guitar riff of I think Milan brought it, came up with it, and yeah, that was basically it, you know. So, and I when I did the vocal lines for it, you know, it just sometimes it takes a while, and I think but Ravenous Minds was a vocal line that came up in my head immediately after I heard it. I had it, you know. So I'm, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes my brain works, you know, so, so, and, yeah, but whatever comes to your mind, just do it, record it, And sometimes the first idea is the best idea.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah, I agree, man. Well, as far as the video is concerned, did you have any real input on what you wanted to do with that? Or did you think, because there's kind of a horror theme with the record, and that's going on to my next question here in a minute, of doing something more of a storyline, or did you just want to do something pure performance like you did in the video?
We the last big video clips we have released were different, totally different ones, you know. And Fire Soul, you were able to see us in suits, wearing suits, and so on, and torturing scenes and stuff. And on the latest one we have released, you know, we were wearing masks and stuff. And a lot of fans came to us on the last tours, you know, and they said always like, yeah, it's okay seeing these video clips, but Brainstorm is a band we know as a great live band, you know. So we know you as an awesome live performing band, you know. So we said, okay, what does that mean? And so they said, yeah, we want to see your faces, and we want to see you people perform. And I was really like, you know, I'm not so into performing and performance videos and so on. And they said, yeah, but now you've done it with suits, now you've done it with masks, why not having a normal metal video, you know, that absolutely shows what Brainstorm is also all about, you know. So a great live performance, fire, lights, everything else, you know, sweating people, you know, and stuff. And so I said, okay, so then we talked to our director, and Mirko, and Mirko is an amazing guy, you know, and he said, yeah, okay, let's do it, let's do something different this time. And to be very honest, I had to learn this also, you know, as the people are now, it seems like the people like this video much more than they like the latest ones, you know. So okay, if that is the goal, it's fine with me. So now if they want to see our faces, okay, we thought we're ugly enough to hide ourselves behind masks, but we're not. So let's have ourselves on the let's have the faces on the and on the screen. So okay, it's fine with me.
Nice,
but it's okay. It was good. It's amazing.
Well, another song I wanted to bring up is Four Blessings. I really like that one. Kind of a mid-tempo rocker thing. A really good driving riff. Good solid chorus. Do you have a cool story on how that song came together? Just how you guys put that together, if there's anything, any like back meeting or anything like that that you were trying to convey.
Yeah, I had this one once in my mind when I heard this song for the very first time. It came out to me like like an old school whatever Men of War Accept or whatever song, you know. So, and I had this feeling from this, you know. So, and I think one of the most important things I've learned over the last couple of years is really like that I should not think about too many things too many times, you know. So just let it go, you know, just let the music do the talking, you know, like Aerosmith already said, you know. So because what comes to your mind, that's definitely the right thing, you know. So, and I had this feeling when I heard this song for the very first time, The Four Blessings, and I had this whoa, and Thorsten looked at me and I said, so you're not singing any words, any no specific words or so? And I said, no, just whoa, whoa, whoa. And he said, okay, so we're doing whoa, whoa, whoa. And I said, yeah, we're doing whoa, whoa, whoa. That was funny, you know. So, but the funny thing is that when I did also, I did this whoa, whoa, I did this right on the recording, recordings of the demo tapes, you know, when we recorded the songs for the very first time. And the funny thing is really, in the first place, all the band members looked at me like, that sounds a little bit strange, or? But after the recordings, when we went out of the practicing room and went back to our cars, all of them stood there like, oh, oh. And I said, uh-huh, it's not so bad, huh? And they said, ah, go to hell, Andy, with your damn bloody bad ideas. And I said, yeah, but it's if it sticks in your mind, it's not so bad, my friend. And then all looked at me like, okay, we will talk about this in January. And then we came back, and the funny thing is really, that's no bullshit. The one part they have not forgotten about over 3-4 months, you know, was this whoa, whoa, that was it. And I said, and you're talking about that I should sing a lyrics on that, or I should skip that, or what? And I said, okay, if that is the part we're still have in our minds after 4 months, you got to have it on the album. And I said, ah, I'm winning.
Nice.
That was it. That was cool. And that's also something good, you know. So you come together after so many months, you know, and then you think, okay, what do you remember about the songs we have recorded? I remember, and then I said, uh-huh. But you've been the one just bashing at me, like, oh, how can you record something like that? That's not us. And I said, it is us. It is us. That was good.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Let me ask you this, Andy. This album, is it a concept record? It seems like there's something like a thread that kind of ties it, but maybe it's a loose thread, so it's not really truly a concept record.
No, it's not a concept album, but as you already said, yeah, some of the lyrics are about things you've been scared of when you were a kid, for example. And the cool thing is that when I received the guitars and drums and bass, you know, with no ideas so far, and then I sit there and like always I sit there in front of my computer and said, okay, now 10 up to 12 songs, writing lyrics again. Okay, what do I have to do? I have to read books, I have to check newspapers, I have to watch documentaries, and so on and so on. And then I have to write about something I'm probably not really familiar with. So, and then I started writing on some songs, just some ideas, collecting ideas, you know. And then I started writing about things I went through when I was a kid, you know. So I was a very scared kid, you know, when I was really young, you know, when I was about 4 or 5 years old. I always watched under my bed, you know, and that is something I also did when I was 14, 15 years old, you know. So I was really scared always, the whole day, you know. So when you came around, I was scared of you, definitely, no problem. So, and there were moments in my life, you know, when I was really scared, you know, just coming back from a soccer game, and then I had to go back home to my parents' house. I had to run through a, let's say, 500 meters forest, you know, but it was pretty dark outside. So now I've been the only one to run in that kind of direction, and then I ran through this dark forest like the hell, like the devil's behind me, you know. So, and I was so scared. I came home, I was shaking all over my body. I was so, oh my God, you know, the devil's behind me, devil's behind me. Oh my God, that's why I ran through the hell, through the gate of hell, you know. So, and one day after, you know, some years after, I watched a movie, and then I became so scared that for years, I always looked under my bed, you know. Then I looked behind the curtain. I looked in my cupboard, you know, everywhere, you know. So that was, I just locked my cupboard, you know. My mother always wanted to give me trousers on the next day, but she wasn't able to open the cupboard because I just locked it, you know, with a bicycle lock, you know. So, and because I was so scared, probably there's somebody behind in the cupboard, you know. So, but anyhow, this is what I started writing about, you know, and it just came out, and I was not really, there was no need to think about it, there was no need to read a book about it, there was no nothing, you know. On some other songs, of course, I did it as well, but the most of the songs are about things I personally went through, on stories I loved to listen to, you know, so let's say horror stories or so, and that's great, you know. Hey, it made fun writing the lyrics, it made fun recording the songs, and it still makes fun listening to the songs. And that is something I really missed over the last couple of years, and I still love it.
Oh, I love that stuff too. I was going to bring up one of my favorite Iced Earth records was Horror Show, where they talked about all the different legends like Frankenstein and Dracula and stuff. And I like this horror vibe, especially getting close to Halloween. It's something you want to jam to in your car.
Yeah, that's it. Listen to it, Midnight Ghost and Horror Show.
There you go, man. There you go.
Yeah. Well,
the last song.
To John Schaffer. Greetings to John Schaffer, of course, and Matt Barlow. He's a great, a good friend of mine.
Oh, really? Cool.
Both of them. Yes, I just met John and Stu Block, of course, as well. You know, some weeks ago in Barcelona when we played together at Rockfest in Barcelona, together with Kiss and Scorpions and Ozzy Osbourne and so on. It was good. It was so amazing. You know, because Iced Earth being the first band I've been on tour with back in '96. And so this is, of course, that was a milestone for me, you know, going on tour with a band European-wide. That is still something, that's something, you know, a dream came true to me, you know. So that is, of course, something that stuck in my mind forever.
That's awesome. Let me ask you that. When you're at those big festivals and some of the legends, like, you know, the Kiss guys or Ozzy or somebody like that, do you ever get kind of starstruck with any of those guys? Or you've been around long enough yourself that maybe it's like you're seeing an old friend more of that, you know?
The funny thing is really that the other members of the band, they do concentrate on themselves, you know. But I'm not, if I'm sitting there just being concentrated on myself, you know, it's just like I'm getting nervous or so and running to the toilet every 5 minutes. So this doesn't really make any sense to me. So I have to think about something different. And to be very honest, I've always been a fanboy, and I am a fanboy. So, and whenever I got the chance to get an autograph from one of my old heroes, I have to go there and get and ask him for a picture and an autograph. I have to do this. And so, of course, it's the same with Kiss, Scorpions, and so on. Sometimes I just they look at me like, didn't we make pictures many times with each other? And I said, yes, we did. But today is a new day, and yeah. We will never come together any younger, so let's make another picture.
That's so awesome, Andy, because that's something we do, because our sites, just, we're fans of heavy metal, right? So when we get to meet guys in person and stuff like that, I mean, I'm the total fan. I got my Sharpies, I got my CD covers, I got whatever to get it signed and pictures and the whole nine yards.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, this is, whenever we go on a festival, and I know there's some of my heroes playing also, not only the old ones, I'm also really into new, great new bands and so on as well, you know. So I'm not ashamed to go there, you know. So I'm sometimes for example, it's about 15 years ago or so. We used to play the Wacken Open Air, and we had the booth next to the guys of In Flames, you know. And then we came in. My knees were shaking. I was really, because I'm an In Flames fan since the beginning or so, you know. And then I knew they have the booth next to ours, you know, it's the dressing room. And so I went into ours, then I crept all my CD covers, and then went back out, went straight to their door, knocked. Then Björn Gilotte opened, you know, and I said, you're doing what? And I said, hey, I'm a big fan of yours. I need all your signatures. Please don't ask. I need just your signatures, and we have to take a picture. Then he looked at me, has seen my backstage pass, artist pass, and he said, you're playing in the band yourself, or? And I said, yes, we're playing right in front of you at the main stage in about 3 or 4 hours. Uh-huh, so you're a rock star yourself. And I said, nah, I'm not a rock star. But yeah, you are. You're playing on the same stage as we do. And I said, okay, so let's call us rock stars, but it doesn't matter anyway. So let's give me your signatures and let's have a picture because I'm a big fan of yours.
That's freaking awesome, man.
The funny thing is really that Björn and all the, and also, back in the days, it was Johan. They came to me, and then they brought our CD. It was the Soul Temptation album, and said, "Now you have to sign yours." And I said, "You're kidding, huh?" And they said, "No, please do so, because your show was awesome." And I said, "Oh yes, okay, please to Björn." That was cool. That was good. That's 15 years ago.
Oh, that's all. Yeah, I saw them on the Colony record. And Clayman early on playing little clubs in the States. Oh man, they were so awesome back then.
Yeah, still always. Whenever they go on tour, about 4, 5, 6 shows, I have to be there. That's awesome. And always freaking out. There's sometimes people coming to me, "Hey Andy, can you sign here? Can you sign there?" And I said, "Sorry guys, can we do that in about 2 hours or so?" Now I have to bang my head, and whenever I'm ready, we can make pictures and everything else. That's fine.
Nice. Well, to go back to Midnight Ghost real quick, I want to say, and I want to compliment you on this, I understand there's a bonus DVD that's going to be coming with it that's a live show. Can you tell us a little bit about that DVD that comes with the disc?
Yes. We always take care about our fans, to be very honest, and we always think that it's very important, especially for new fans, to give them an overview of what we have done and what we have recorded over the last years. And something like a bonus DVD, bonus CD, is a live CD or live DVD, is something that gives you an inside look, you know, the band is all about and so on. And this time we have chosen a show from my personal hometown, Stuttgart, in the south of Germany. The rest of the guys are not from this area, so I can say my hometown.
There you go.
It's really important. And the thing is really that that was a pretty good show. It was in front of a lot of diehard fans. Fans, they are with us from the first day on. And I think it's also not just because it was a great show, not just it features a lot of songs from the past. It also was something like a thank you to our diehard fans, you know, because they were all in the crowd. And when I came out on stage, you know, I had this smile because I've seen them all. And I could have been able to say, hello you, hello you, hello you, hello you. I could have named, I think, at least 500 of them. But, yeah, that's the reason why we have chosen for a bonus DVD. Personally wise, you know, so as a thank you to some of our fans. But on the other hand, to old fans, they like our shows very much, and to new fans, what is the band all about? What have they released and recorded over the last couple of years? And I think that's great. That gives them a perfect overview.
Oh, that's awesome, man. I love when bands do that, for sure, because it's so hard today with the way the music industry is, with streaming and all that. I'm an old school guy. I like CDs. Streaming or downloads. I could do with downloads. Streaming, I'm not going to get anywhere near it. If I can't get some sort of thing that I can at least put on my iPod, I kind of steer away. And it's sad that the industry's gone this way, but you know, with you guys adding a little extra, that's going to give more incentive to a fan to say, hey, I want to physically purchase this thing and have it at my house.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always, you know, I drove with my bicycle, I drove about 20 up to 40 miles, you know, so to get, just to buy a new Iron Maiden album, you know, on vinyl back in the days, you know, so, and I'm still love having the original version at home. And that's something, when I'm listening to an album, I'd like to look at the cover, I like to check out the booklet and everything else. That's something I need. You know, that's what I love, that's what I love to have, you know, so, and always. So I love also going into stores, checking out some different CDs, finding a new band, you know, so I know I could do this on Spotify or so as well, but it gives me a cooler feeling, to be very honest, to stay in a record store and then finding probably a band I have never ever heard of, and then going home with a new CD and saying like, yeah, this is it for today. This is my treasure for today.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I'm the same way.
I'm a Indiana Jones, and I found this CD.
You know what? I don't know if it's still, I'm sure it's still there, but in Paris, there's a place called Guibert Joseph that's over near, it's over kind of near Notre Dame. That place in the basement, man, you could go be in there for hours digging and digging and digging.
Yeah, I know. I'm in Paris in about 2 weeks, having promotion there for 2 days, and this is definitely a place where I will stay for a while. I know the place.
It's awesome, man. Every time we go, we stay right up the street from it in this like dive hotel. And the reason we stay there is because I want to go to Guibert Joseph in the morning before anybody else can pick through the stuff. So
yeah.
Hey, I want to tell you, I was in Stuttgart one time. We saw Saxon at the Longhorn on their 30th anniversary.
That is exactly the place where we have recorded the DVD.
Oh, that is. Oh, that's why I brought that up. I was wondering if that's where you recorded it. That's a good venue.
That is, absolutely. That is absolutely a great venue. One of the places where I've always been, like, yeah. I'm always are, you know, whenever a band comes, the most of them are playing the Longhorn, and then I love to go there. I love it.
It was a killer place, man. Killer place. It was a great trip because in Nuremberg, we were able to catch a Rage and Fair Warning.
All right.
So my poor wife, I had to drag her to all these metal shows over in Europe, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Okay.
Well, so, as far as touring goes, what are you guys going to do as far as touring? Do you think you might make a date or two in the States, or is it going to mainly just be in Europe?
We have, the funny thing is that we had a long, long meeting with our booking agent, and right now we've been focused on the release shows. We have 5 release shows, got a lot of fans ask for that, doing a special shows just for the release with playing songs we will never ever play again after this show and so on, and we will play songs we haven't played for years, for example. This is something we've done with Firesoul, but we haven't done with Scary Creatures, and some of the people were really upset about this. And then we said, okay, if you want it, you can have it, so let's do it. And then we decided to play 5 special shows. Then we play several festivals in Europe, and then in January, the first leg of the European tour starts. And in March, there's a second leg coming up. It's always 6 weeks or so. And also we're playing a lot of festivals in the summer, but there are plans for us bringing us to the U.S. because right now our booking agent has talked, I think, about 2 or 3 different booking agents from the U.S. and they got really interested in having us. And to me, as you probably know, to me, playing in the States is always a dream comes true. You know, whenever I come over, you know, having buffalo chicken wings and playing in front of a lot of people. You know, playing in front of a lot of crazy Americans. That's great.
Nice.
Yeah, buffalo chicken wings is always the thing I love to eat over there.
Well, if you come to Houston, Texas, we'll get together. I'll take you to a really good place to get some wings and beer.
All right. That's a deal. That's a deal. There you go. Thanks, Mo.
Well, Andy, before we let you go today, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
Of course there is. So, as you probably have heard, I'm really enthusiastic on Midnight Ghost. Find out yourself if it is the album you have been waiting for since your birth, yeah, since you were born, okay. But give it a chance, give it a listen, and find out yourself. We would love to have you in our Brainstorm crew. Would be awesome, you know, and hopefully we will see you somewhere out there. Would be awesome. Thanks so much for your support. Really appreciate it. We love you people. Thank you.
Well, Andy, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on the Right to Rock. And we want to tell all the fans to get Brainstorm's brand new record, Midnight Ghost, out on AFM on September 28th. So we got a little bit of time here, but it kicks ass. From the first note, and no bullshit here, man, it is a killer record. It hits you from the start and doesn't let you go until it ends. And then you start it over again, and it happens all over again. So
it kicks your ass. And your friends as well.
Exactly, exactly. But Andy, was awesome talking to you, man. Would love to do this again. You're welcome on our show anytime, brother.
Thanks for having me. You're amazing. Thank you very much, Ragman. Awesome. Thank you so much for your support. Really, really appreciate it. I hope to see you really soon in person.
To our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.